Welcome to episode 24 of the Island Library podcast. I'm Jo from Pages of the Moon.
And I'm Laura from Laura Liz Buckley.
And welcome to the penultimate episode of season one. This episode is a special one because it is with our lovely Island Library book club, where we have both read a different book from the fantasy genre. I have read The Shadows Between Us by Tricia Levenseller.
And I read Cinderella is Dead by Kaylin Bayron.
And if you're completely new to this podcast, firstly, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on the beach. The general setup is that we will both say the blurb off the back of our books, and then I will go first this week and say my pitch. And then I'll give a general breakdown of the book, my seashell rating, and answer the all-important question before handing over the baton to my lovely co-host, who will do the same. Because it is a book club episode, we do have some questions nominated from our book club, which we will answer, and then we'll go into the question of the week, which actually is coming from Laura this week.
Exciting times all round. I tell you what, I really love these episodes where we record right after the book club because it's so interesting hearing other people's thoughts on the books.
Yeah.
It was a fun book club this week, and I hope that some of our listeners will consider joining us as we finish up season one.
Yes.
We've got some exciting books lined up for December's club.
The other thing is that the book club will continue on even when the podcast recording's going to hiatus. So to kick things off, because I just want to get into the nitty gritty, this is The Shadows Between Us blurb. Alessandra is tired of being overlooked, but she has a plan to gain power. 1. Woo the Shadow King. 2. Marry him. 3. Kill him and take his kingdom for herself. No one knows the extent of the freshly crowned Shadow King's powers. Some say he can command the shadows that swirl around him to do his bidding. Others say they speak to him, whispering the thoughts of his enemies. Regardless, Alessandra knows what she deserves, and she's going to do everything within her power to get it.
Well, she sounds kind of terrifying.
Yes, very much so.
The blurb then of Cinderella is Dead goes, it's 200 years since Cinderella found her prince, but the fairy tale is over. Sophia knows the story, though, off by heart, because every girl has to recite it daily, from when she's tiny until the night she's sent to the royal ball for choosing. And every girl knows that she has only one chance, for the lives of those not chosen by a man at the ball are forfeit. But Sophia doesn't want to be chosen. She doesn't want to go to the ball at all. Not when she's afraid the girl she loves might be chosen too. Pushed beyond breaking by a society that denies everything she is, Sophia sets out on a journey that will remake her world into one where she gets to choose.
Interesting. So, to entice you lovely listeners, here is my pitch for The Shadows Between Us. Alessandra, not wanting to settle for Benita, sets her sights on the elusive Shadow King, the ruler of six kingdoms. She doesn't want to fall in love, she wants to kill him and take the crown from him. She doesn't want to fall in love with him. Except he's more than he seems.
Ooh.
So I took a different spin purposefully because I want to be very clear that this was picked because it was a fantasy book. However, upon reading said book, I feel like it sits more within romance. Now, there's a common theme that came up within the book club as well, that it was very difficult to place the book and to have where it sits within the fantasy world, because obviously, as we all know, there are different little pockets. There's medieval, there's high fantasy with your dragons and everything, and then there's even like futuristic fantasy, whereas this book just had a mix of different things from different times, so it made it very hard to place. But then, on top of that, the only thing that was really fantasy about it was actually the Shadow King, who, for me to best describe him, his name's Callias. He has these sort of like smoky shadows around him that kind of make him, I don't know how to, sort of not invisible, but you could float through him.
Uncorporeal,
which means that no one's allowed to touch him, because if you touch him, then he becomes corporeal around you. And obviously he doesn't want to give all of his power away, because then if that person's around him, anyone can try and kill him, which many people have tried to do. Because obviously everyone wants the crown, don't they? I mean, it's not the easiest thing in the world. Unless you're Alessandra, who thinks, oh, it's going to be so easy. I'm just going to go in there with my fine dresses and I'm going to corrupt this man. So, just taking it back a step, the general plot of this book is that Alessandra, we meet her and she's in bed with another man called Myron, who is, I would say he's just the typical ex, like he's a bit scorned, he's a bit selfish, he's a bit, you know, annoyed by things. But her dad walks in and he's like, oh, your sister's got engaged, now you need to find someone to get married to. And she's all like, oh no. And then she's like, oh, actually, let me go for the Shadow King. And her dad's like, nah, I don't think the king's going to be after you, mate. But she's like, I'm going to give it a go anyway. But Alessandra's got a deep, dark secret in the fact that she killed one of her previous lovers. She thinks she's done a pretty good job of hiding said body and, you know, getting rid of everything to do with it. But we all know that it wouldn't be worth mentioning in a book if it ain't come back to bite her on the arse. So look out for that. The book generally follows the normal trope. I would say it's like enemies to lovers. They mutually benefit one another, the Shadow King and Alessandra. But they keep each other at arm's length. She doesn't want to fall in love with him because obviously her purpose is to kill him. He doesn't want to fall in love with her because he wants to focus on ruling the Six Kingdoms, which is very understandable. I mean, he's a very busy man. However, all of that seems to get lost. The fantasy element seems to fall off pretty quickly once she enters the palace. There's nothing fantastical about the place. It's a typical palace, typical royalty situation. She's always in fancy dresses. People are throwing themselves at her feet 24/7. Like, she has got more proposals coming at her than she knows what to do with. Now, I don't really want to start off with my issues with the book, but I feel like I already opened that page, so I'm just going to continue. But a sort of promised, sort of Slytherin-esque book romance. Now, I'm very aware of the fact that the house traits don't actually match up with real people. Like, at one point in time, I was a Slytherin. I'm now a Hufflepuff, so that's just one example. But neither character really stay within this Slytherin trope for very long. So what I mean by that is that Callias is a tyrant king. He does do things that, you know, he just unmercifully kills a lot of people. And he goes to war and all these other things. But then he also is very affectionate towards her. He's very affectionate to some of the people that he cares about, even if he holds everybody at arm's length. He also's got a really wicked big dog who... he says it's like his best friend, which is kind of nice. And then Alessandra, we first meet her and we think, oh, she's gonna be a badass, but actually she very quickly shows her cards and she doesn't really think, and then the plot seems to unravel from there, a bit like a jumper that's been caught and the thread just keeps being pulled and pulled until there's not really a lot left. And it's very hard to keep up with what the actual plan is, because we're led to believe that the plot is going to be about her going to kill him, but actually she ends up aiding him, and she says it's more because she wants to choose when he's going to die and not let him be assassinated. But that seems to also fall away very quickly because you can tell she's starting to get feelings for him. So it's all very, very bizarre. There's a whole scene with Hector, which is the ex that she killed. Now, because that's one of the first things we're introduced to, I kind of thought this was going to be a huge plot. I thought, yes, this is definitely going to come back. It's going to ruin everything with the king. However, spoiler, not spoiler, because it doesn't really have a huge impact on the rest of the plot. When the king finds out about it, he's super blasé about it. He's super like, oh, you killed someone? It happens. Like, it's a daily recurrence for him. And I mean, I know he's a king and he's around death probably quite a lot, but...
You'd still expect a bit more of a reaction than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I expected a bit more like, how dare you go around killing people? But he's super chill. And I mean super chill with the fact that he laughs his ass off as soon as the policeman basically exits. He's like, lol, can't believe you just killed somebody. Don't worry about it. I'll get it sorted. And it's like, there's no repercussions except even from that point onwards, it just unravels further. The worst thing that I think I really struggled with is I'm never that bothered about having super to the point character descriptions, because I like my mind to construct them themselves, and I really am a huge fan of that. However, I got nothing from the world. Now, I already mentioned that it was really hard to place in what sort of fantasy setting this book was set in, but I don't even have a clear idea of really what the palace is like. I don't know if it's cold, I don't know if it's warm, I don't know if they're, you know, the general colours of the guards. I'm not very familiar with her surroundings, so which makes it very hard to understand what the entire point of her being trapped in this palace. And I say trapped, although she was invited, nobody is allowed to leave because of another plot that's never really answered. I don't know what these six kingdoms look like that he's managed to dominate. I don't even know what the kingdom looks like that she lives in. And she's not some pauper. She's from, like, she has got money. Well, that's what you're led to believe. And then her dad at one point is like, he's got no money. So he wants to sell her off to make some money, which is very odd. Right. But I think he's like a duke or something. I mean, this is what I mean. It's very hard to pin down because things change so rapidly within the book. And the plot at one stage is like this firm corporal thing, which then quickly becomes a bit like the Shadow King and becomes uncorporal. And
she's into shadows.
Literally. There are some really nice romantic scenes. If this book was set as a romance that had fantasy elements, I think I probably would have liked it more. But because I went into it thinking, yes, we're going to get stabbings, we're going to get murder, we're going to get a badass woman who's going to wear really nice robes and she's going to unpick this entire royal system, and actually she just goes and becomes a pawn amongst it, and it just becomes very boring very quickly. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the book and I read it and I got through it very, very quickly. It's a super easy read, but upon reflection I kind of realized that not a lot have happened. And now if you'd have told me that this whole book was set within 24 hours, I would have gone, yeah, I can believe that, because there's not really a lot that happens for you to think, well, that's not realistic. I mean, I think my general thoughts is that it happens over like 1 or 2 weeks. Well, obviously, I think it must go on for a lot longer than that. But again, it's hard because there's no settings. I don't get any temperature changes. I don't get any, whether it's sunny, whether it's raining. I don't know what the weather's like. I don't know anything outside of this palace. But then I also don't know what the palace is like. And it becomes very problematic as the book goes on, because there are certain elements to it in which she's like forced to go to, say, part A and part B, and you have no idea where she is. So you don't really understand if she's walked super far or if she's just wandered a little bit.
Yeah.
However, as I say this, again, as much as if it'd been marketed as a romance book, I might have liked it more. I'm still disappointed in the romance. It was very quick to get from, I don't know you and I just want to take your crown, to, oh my God, I'm going to do everything I can to protect you. And not just to serve my own needs and my own wants and desires. So because of that, it just became very uninteresting on reflection. Like, on the first read, it's super easy to get through. I did enjoy it. And I thought this was actually a really fun book. And also, I think more importantly, because it was a book that I chose, I really wanted to like it because I'd been eyeing it up for such a long time. And like, the blurb, it seemed so interesting. I was like, yes, we're going to get a woman who wants to be queen, but she doesn't want to be queen because she deserves it. She wants to take it because she doesn't deserve it. And she kind of wants to undo everything that's kind of wrong with this world. And I thought that's the character I want to get behind. That's the character I want to celebrate. But that's not the character that I end up getting about halfway through the book, which is disappointing. And it's also, the first thing we're told is that she's going to do anything in her power. She's going to kill him. It's the third step of her great plan, is that she's going to kill him. And yet, the only thing that we get about her being able to do that is this plot with Hector, the ex-lover, which quickly goes away and no one blinks an eye. So it's like, well, there's no repercussions if murder was a thing. So, yeah. There are some really interesting characters within it. There's two girls that Alessandra befriends who I would have loved to have seen more from. Rhoda and Hestia. They are two women that she sort of befriends because she doesn't want to get the reputation that she just hangs out with men. So when immediately called out for that, she literally goes and finds the only two women that don't look threatening and goes and stands with them because she thinks, well, this way I won't be called anything behind my back and I might actually have some loyal friends. She doesn't seem like she's got many people in her life that she can depend on. Like, her dad quickly turns on her when she gets entered into the palace. Her sister seems like an absolutely rotten character. So that's not really going for it either. And then the only other person that she sort of knew before going into the palace was Myron, who turns out to actually be the most despicable human on the planet. But I won't go too much into him because even he's not that very well developed in the whole grand scheme of things. But saying all of that, there is something very familiar about this book. There's something very comforting about it, as if you already know all these characters and that you're picking it up. It almost feels as if the prequel to it was something that you read when you were younger and you're picking it up now, and you're able to just jump straight back into the world. And it sort of reads as if that's the case as well, like as if you're meant to know what the world already looks like. You're already meant to know the characteristics of these characters and what drives them. But obviously, that was fine upon first read, but upon reflection and when you really trying to pin down, and whether you, even when it came to just thinking of how would I describe this to my co-host, I was really struggling on how to place this book and what I was going to say, because there are so many elements of it that I thought I liked. And then when I thought back over it, I thought, well, no, this could have been executed better. I don't think this was developed well enough. But yeah, I got through it with relative ease. So it seems like I'm contradicting myself, but the book is very contradictive itself. I think a good word to describe it is it's extreme. It goes from one element to another very, very quickly, to the point that it literally goes from I'm going to kill him to, oh my God, I think I'm falling in love with him in about a few chapters. Whereas that feeling sort of gets developed over time, sometimes even over a trilogy. Whereas this book sort of crammed it in, and I'm just lifting the book up to show Laura, but it's not even a very thick book.
No, that's not that substantial for the character arc that you're talking about.
Yeah, and it's about 300 pages. Yeah, it's about 320 pages. And a lot happens, and there's a lot of people introduced, and there's a lot of rules and regulations. And yet there also isn't, when you try and unpick that, to think, okay, so what are the rules of this world? And I'm like, you can't touch the king. Women can't have intercourse with anybody before they get married. But the king doesn't actually, the king is very happy to be touched by Alessandra eventually. And also he wants to undo all these archaic values. So it's like, it sort of takes the point of the book, the first half of it, and thinks, well, how am I going to deconstruct this and burn this in front of the reader's eyes? And then does so. So, yeah, it's a difficult book. It was a book I was really excited to read. And upon picking the fantasy genre, I was like, this is the book that I want to read, because I've been eyeing it up. It's got some people really excited and it's torn a few people. And I've been like, why has it done that? And now upon reading it, I can see it, because it's hard. It's very hard. I mean, in general, in the way the sentences flow, I can't fault them. There was nothing about anything that stuck out. It was just development issues. I just don't feel like the plot was completely there. I don't feel like at times there were more holes than there were actual points going off. And normally I think of like my Justice Award, and I think of, okay, what was the one thing that really stuck out for me that I wish that I saw was being handled? But actually, there were so many threads by the end of it that I was confused by, that I don't feel like I got a satisfying ending. And normally I'm thinking, oh my God, okay, let's get another book and maybe we can unpick all of this. But I don't think I would want to read it, which kind of sucks. Have you got any questions before I sort of...
Yeah, no, I do have a few. So something that I haven't really been able to pin down from listening to you, and maybe that's because it wasn't that clear for you as you were reading, but what are your thoughts on the character of the king? Like, is he broody with a heart of gold? Is he a villain through and through? Where are we at with him? You just pulled a face like...
He's jealous. I can say he's jealous. At times he wants her only to himself. He doesn't want to share her. He can't rule independently. I think that's to do with his age. So he has sort of a court that he puts the decisions, and if they vote on it, then they can action it.
Does he seem like a good king? Like, does he take his responsibility seriously? Does he want to do good things for the people? Or
it's hard to tell, because there was an instance where there's some like sort of revolt going off, and he thinks of handling it, and Alessandra sort of gives him a point of view that maybe he hadn't considered but was really, really obvious. So it's a bit like, well, you're a king of six kingdoms, how have you considered this? And you kind of expect him to have more brain than he does. Mm. Either he is very brainy, or it was to more lift Alessandra as a character and sort of dumbed his character down. It's really hard to tell, but you don't really get a good sense of whether he's a good king or not, because you don't know what the setting's like. You don't know what the right. world's like to know whether, you know, everybody outside the palace is living as comfortably as possible, or whether, you know, everyone's in poverty and he's actually taking more money and he's living with all his like riches. It's really hard to tell. There are moments, the sentences that nod to him being a unkind king and a tyrant, and, you know, but again, I feel like if we had a setting of when this was set, we might get more understanding of whether he is a good king or not. So it's hard to really pin down the characters themselves. It's really hard to even pin down Alessandra, and she's the main character that we follow, because we think she's going to be a badass, and sort of that unpicks very quickly, and we kind of learn that actually she's quite soft underneath it all, which is fine. I'm always here for that, as long as her badassery is also shown. And it's like, you can't really have one without the other, and I feel like that's the same with the king.
So that actually leads me on to another question that I had, which is, obviously she sets out in this book to seduce, maybe, but definitely kill the king ultimately. And you obviously mentioned that she's killed somebody in the past. So from that point of view, you might be reading and thinking, yeah, I totally buy that she's going to kill him in the end. But on the other hand, you also said a couple of things that make it sound like she doesn't really come across as all that ruthless, or kind of doesn't necessarily have that potential for violence. So when you were reading it at the beginning, obviously before she flipped and decided she loved him, did you feel like it was believable that she could go through with her plan to kill him? Or did it always feel like, I mean, she's saying this is what she intends, but reading her character, that doesn't seem like something she's capable of?
It's hard to tell, because immediately when we first meet her, you think, yeah, 100%, and then the next chapter you're like, no, she's not going to kill anybody. It's like she's got the brains to do it, and it's not even like the physical strength or anything like that. It's just, she just seems more devious than ruthless. She seems more like, whatever's the easiest, she's going to do that. And if she can break the rules while doing it, then she's going to do that over someone who's thinking, okay, I'm power hungry. She never strikes me as someone who's just hungry for power, which will drive her, because her entire reasoning for trying to kill him isn't 100% clear at all times. It sort of changes with the wind. And I don't really want to ruin the latter end of the book for anyone who is picking it up and is thinking, okay, loads of people are having these discussions, I want to get in on that, so I'm going to read it and then I'm going to sort of figure out my own conclusion. But I feel like even by the end of it, it's still not 100% clear when all things come to a head about what her primary motivation is. Yeah, it was very difficult.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, those were the two things that were really intriguing me, so thank you.
I mean, again, this book was super hard to discuss because I'm trying to be as honest as I can without giving too much away. But I'm not sure that it was marketed the correct book. I don't know I think the problem is that there's too many things going off, and there's too many threads, and there's too many genres involved in this book with too many tropes then to try and tick off, that everything felt a little bit weak. There wasn't a single part of it that felt super strong. And I say that as somebody who's finished the book and read it super quickly, so it is an easy, comfortable read, but it's on reflection when you look back at it. I feel like this is one of those books that you'd read and you go, oh my God, please read this book and talk to me about it. And then your friend reads it and then she goes, actually, I didn't like it for these reasons. And you go, oh my God, yeah, I didn't like it for that reason either. It's one of those books that if you first read it and you think, oh, this is okay, I don't mind it. And then it's only when you hear back, or you look back at it and you think, okay, so what was the bits that I liked about it that I loved seeing other books? And you go, actually, I can't pin them down. Which kind of leads me to my seashell rating.
Yeah, what we got?
I'm going with a 2.5 seashell out of 5. It was more than okay, but I didn't like it, especially on reflection. I feel like there was a lot more that could have been done. There was a lot of things that I felt were executed quite poorly in the grand scheme of things. And I, by the end of it, I think if there wasn't the romance in it and I wanted to see if they actually did kiss, I don't think I would have stayed reading it either.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Would it come with you to the Island Library?
No, I don't think it's going to, no. I think it's going to remain on land, but not on the beach.
It's so funny because obviously, you know, we try not to talk to each other too much about our thoughts on the book before we record because we want to save the conversation to be had, not in person, but in real time for our listeners. But we do often message something that kind of indicates a little bit of how we're feeling. And you sounded really enthusiastic about it a few days ago. So it sounds like maybe it's one of those books that, like, the experience of reading it is quite captivating. It does drag you in. But then when you get out of it and you're looking back, you think, why? Did I really like it that much? Or was I just swept up?
Yeah, definitely. This is definitely one of those books that I feel like you would read, you'd think, oh my God, I love that. And then the next day you go, did I love it? It's a bit like, the best way for me to describe it, and there's a very strong sense of fashion in this book, which I was here for. But the best way for me to describe it is when you walk into a shop and you see a dress and it's not your style and it's not the colour you would normally wear, but you think, you know what, that would be that dress for that event and I'm going to get it. And you try it on in the shop and you go, yes, this is it. And it's a bit pricier than you would normally pay, but you think, I look amazing in it, so I'm gonna buy it. And then you get it home and you put it in your wardrobe and you pull it out the next day and you go, what in living hell did I buy yesterday? And it doesn't matter how what heels you put it with, what bag you put it with, how you do your hair, it does not look like it did in the shop, and you think you've actually bought a different dress. And that is what this book is like. On the day, loved it, couldn't have raved highly enough about it. The next day, woke up and thought, what have I done? And I'm glad in this case that I read the book earlier than I would normally get a chance to, because it allowed me to process it. So it's actually taught me a lot to do for season two.
Interesting. Okay, so moving on then to Cinderella is Dead by Kaylin Bayron. So my pitch for this book is, Cinderella is dead, but her story lives on. The teenage girls of Lille are obliged by law to follow in her footsteps. They present themselves at the annual ball and hope to be beautiful enough to attract a husband. If they fail to appeal to the men present, they are forfeit, and many are never seen again. It's a perilous situation, but the stakes are even higher for Sophia, who doesn't want to marry a man. She wants to be with Erin, the girl she has loved for the last 3 years. But can one headstrong young woman make a difference to 2 centuries of tradition? I was so excited to read this book. I like fantasy anyway, so I was excited to have like a fantasy themed week. But then also, I'd been seeing murmurs on the internet about this book. So we've got a protagonist who is female, she is black, she is queer, and I was 100% here for it. I was like, let us see this protagonist smash the patriarchy, give it to me. And it didn't live up to my expectations, unfortunately. So for one thing, and I think this actually has some of the issues that I had with this book, I think are common to the issues that you had with your fantasy pick for this one. So there was a lot of potential for world building in this story that I think went completely wasted. There is not much of a sense of the lives of these characters beyond the immediate situation that they're in. And sort of the way that the systems of this world work, I felt were very poorly fleshed out. All of the attention is placed on how the girls prepare for this ball and the fact that Sophia doesn't want to. That is kind of the entirety of the world building, with a little bit set aside for men treating women badly. Which, brief aside for content warnings, basically, as you might think from the way the book is set up, there's a lot of sexism, there's homophobia, there's also some very explicitly shown domestic abuse and some sexual abuse, which obviously that's something to bear in mind if you're thinking of reading this, and those might be sensitive topics for you. The misogyny in the book, now I know the whole book is set up to challenge misogyny and sexism, but it's exaggerated in the story almost to the point of being like a caricature, which to me undercut, it made it hard to take the villains seriously, because all of the men that Sophia comes across are so vile that it's less like, wow, that really makes me think about the world we live in, and more like, well, why isn't everybody seeing how awful this is? Like, that's just ridiculous. Do we really truly believe that every other woman is just taking this lying down and every single man is okay with it or complicit? Everything was really overt. So that kind of comes through quite early on, and I think undercut for me some of the messaging that I thought was really, could otherwise have been really strong in this book, of standing up to these forces even when it's difficult. And obviously it's difficult for Sophia because her life is at risk, and I don't want to undermine that. And obviously there are places in the world where things are this violent and this bad. So I don't know. I just, it felt like a lack of nuance, I guess, that was a bit disappointing. So our main character is Sophia, as established, and she is in love with this girl, Erin. They have been sort of together, or at least Sophia's been in love with Erin for, she says, about 3 years. And there's a lot of telling in this book rather than showing. So we are told that Sophia loves Erin. We see no reason for her to love Erin. We see no mutual feelings particularly, because Erin has completely bought into her role in the system. She's like, yes, I'm going to have to find a husband, and you're going to have to find a husband, and we just have to deal with that. Actually, she seems more irritated than anything by Sophia's insistence that things shouldn't be like this, which was quite difficult to read, because it felt like this is the girl that you want to risk everything for. She's completely dismissive of you. And there's no sense of, like, things used to be different, and now that the ball is approaching, she's had to get serious. There's very little groundwork laid for their relationship. So that was a bit frustrating. We get quite an interesting character show up, Luke, who he and Sophia have an awareness of each other, or she was aware of him before the story, and then they kind of come to know each other a bit. And he's also gay, which he kind of confesses to her and says that he knows that she's been seeing another girl. And at first she's really suspicious of him and quite harsh about him. Like, she makes some comment that he's, like, abrasive but not malicious. And it's like, I've not seen him be abrasive yet. He seems to be really trying to have a genuine conversation with you. But he comes up with a plan. Now, this is another bit of a bugbear of mine, because Sophia, despite having been desperate to escape this place for at least 3 years, and it's kind of implied her whole life she's known that she wants to get away, she's come up with no plan for it. She's got no sense of how this might happen. She's made no attempts. She's just like, we should get out of here. And then the empty void where a plan would otherwise be. Now Luke comes up with a plan, which is cool. That's, you know, that was quite exciting. I thought, okay, great. So I'm looking forward to seeing. And when we were having the book club, another member of the book club raised this as well. And I thought, like, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I thought that was going to be a really interesting path for the story to go down. And then the plan falls apart and Luke is basically never seen again. It was like, oh, bye then, Luke. You seemed nice. And so begins a story where Sophia basically just is waiting for someone else to tell her what the next step is, which for a character who comes across as being quite, she's definitely brave. She's willing to stand up for what's right, despite there being a lot on the line for her. And she doesn't seem unintelligent, but she just seems to have no agency for so much of the story. She's just being whacked about like a pinball, fleeing one situation, winding up somewhere else where someone says, like, oh, you should do this. Okay, then off she goes again, pinball to the other side of the table. And then it's like, oh, that isn't going to work, but we don't know what is going to work. Let's just head into this situation blindly and see what happens. Okay, says Sophia, and off she rolls. So that was frustrating, because she seemed like a character who could have had so much more control in her own story. And considering the whole idea of it is that she's trying to take control of her life, like, that's the underlying premise, right? That she, on behalf of women, she is trying to take control of a situation where she has been denied agency. And yet there is very little of her actively doing that. And that was really frustrating. She meets another girl who she finds very intriguing. And there were some cute moments between them. Again, I wish we could have been shown their relationship building rather than just being told right away that Sophia fancied her. And the relationship was basically kind of in that state for most of the... They went from like complete strangers to pretty mutual crushing on each other, clearly. There was basically no real escalation in their relationship from that point. It was just, oh yeah, we seem to like each other. Cool. Like I said, cute moments. And I like the female-female romance representation, but it would have been nice to actually have like an arc of a female-female romance rather than just, here are two female characters that fancy each other. Then time starts moving pretty strangely in the story. The pacing feels a bit odd after. So about a third of the way through, we get the ball that Sophia goes to and she has to flee that. And up to that point, the pacing of the story, I think, was pretty good. And then it felt a bit wonky after that. So, you know, I wasn't sure how long they were spending on various things, how long they were spending traveling, how long they were staying in various points where they were staying. And I think the sense of urgency kind of dissipated and the author kind of struggled to pull it back. There was a bit of a plot device that came into it where it was like, oh, now suddenly things are really urgent. But that didn't set anything into motion particularly, or at least it didn't seem to speed up anything that was already going on. They carried on doing exactly what they planned to do before that. So, yeah, I feel like I've just talked a lot about what I didn't like about the book.
That's okay, because I feel like that's all I did with mine as well.
There were things that I liked. I liked Sophia. I wish we'd got to know her better. But, you know, I really liked her courage. I think her determination did come through. There was a bit of a weird thing where characters kept telling her after meeting her and seeing her do almost nothing, oh, I've never met someone as headstrong or brave as you. And I'm like, you haven't seen her do anything yet. You've not read the rest of this book. What grounds do you have for saying that? But she did seem like she could have been so much more interesting if only we'd gotten to see more of her. And she does this thing where she's always picking fights with people, which I'm assuming is kind of it's her one outlet, right? There's very little that she can take control of in her life. So this is in the first third of the book. She snipes at people and she winds them up in situations where it would be safer not to, which felt like potentially something quite interesting. That's an interesting little sort of release valve for her frustrations. But we don't get much of a sense of her interior, like her experience of frustration and feeling like she needs an outlet. So that was a little bit flat, where I think it could have been something really interesting in her characterization. So obviously the whole premise is that everyone is supposed to do as Cinderella did. So the fairy tale of Cinderella is like required reading for everybody, as it sort of says in the blurb. And that's considered historically true. So Cinderella married Prince Charming. She was visited by a fairy godmother on the eve of the ball. And so all of these characters did really exist, but their stories are not quite as the fairy tale makes out. So the girl that Sophia meets when she's on the run is a descendant of one of the wicked stepsisters. So she gets to tell Sophia part of the truth. And I like that. I like that idea of there being these people who really lived and their stories have been kind of appropriated and changed and made over to fit a narrative that the king now wants to peddle to the people. And I liked what they did with the fairy godmother. So I won't talk too much about her because I think her storyline is kind of interesting and a fun one. Sophia and Constance, the girl that she's with, find the fairy godmother and she becomes embroiled in their efforts to remake the world. And yeah, I thought her storyline was interesting. So yeah, there were a lot of elements that I was so excited about going into it. And even as they came up in the story, I thought, oh, this could go somewhere really fun. And then I feel like there was a lack of follow through on the things that I was really excited to see. So yeah, have you got any questions before I head into my wrap up?
I just wondered, like, what was the fantasy setup? Because obviously I really struggled with it in mine, because it was just one guy with powers sort of thing. And I just wondered what it was in yours.
It's interesting in a way, because there are a lot of characters who believe in magic, because obviously the fairy tale of Cinderella has the fairy godmother who shows up and magics Cinderella into a beautiful ball gown. So a lot of people are holding out hope that the fairy godmother will visit them. And there are other people who think, like, clearly there is no magic in the world. You're a moron. So it's not like magic is this commonly accepted thing that people see in their day-to-day lives. With that said, there are definite elements of magic underpinning the story. A lot of the specific ways in which magic is used kind of come out towards the end. So I don't want to go into the specific instances of magic that you see or hear about within the story. But magic is a reality in this world, even if it's not something that is in common use.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. No, thank you.
It feels more like a fairy tale setting than a fantasy setting in many ways.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. More so, I feel like that just for me, it was just clarity, more just to check.
I came into this book so ready to be blown away. And then I was just really disappointed. And I think part of that is just that my expectations were so high. And I think maybe if I'd come into it thinking more like, if I picked it up more at random, then I don't think I would feel quite as let down by it as I was. It was because I was so hyped for it. I love that we have a YA fantasy with a queer black female protagonist. I think that's brilliant. And I love that she is so brave and determined and so refuses to tolerate the injustice that she lives with. And I just wanted to showcase her more and to know her more. And I also was ready to get completely swept up in a female-female romance, which ended up feeling a little bit thin in the end. So that's where the book fell short for me. So my seashell rating, actually it was going to be a little bit higher, but then after talking about it in the book club and hearing the firm opinions of some of our other readers, I've amended it to what I think is an accurate 2 seashells. It was okay. It had so much potential, but it was okay. And I did, when I finished it, it wasn't with a sense of like, oh, that was fun. It was with a, well, it's done now.
So, would you take it to your island library?
No, it's not gonna go to the island library with me. So I still, I'm finishing season 1 with 2 spare spots because I'm so picky. I'm sorry.
No, but that's good. You could get blown away by the next book club options before season 2 kicks off. You never know. If not, go into season 2 with 2 spaces and not have to be throwing any in the ocean. So there are benefits to the situation. So we asked at the end of our book club session, as always, if there are any questions that they would love to put us on the spot and answer. I have 3 that are directed to both of us, and I've got 1 that was just for you. So I might kick off with the one that's just for you, so then we can both bounce off ideas of the other one. Mm-hmm. So for yourself, it was your thoughts on the LGBTQ+ element to the book, and did you think it was well explored?
So I think one thing that's really great about Sophia is that she has absolutely no doubt in who she is. So I liked that there was no uncertainty in her. She knew she was gay. She was in love with Erin. She fancied Constance, and there was no angst over what does that mean about my identity? So that was really nice. And I think not that I have any issue with books that center around that question of what is my identity and the issue of coming out. But it is also fun to have a fantasy where that's just a given. She is a lesbian. No question mark. So I liked that. I would have liked to see the romance played out more, as I've indicated, but I think that's often an issue in straight romance plot lines as well. It's just kind of insta attraction and insta love. So I don't think that was a a flaw in terms of like LGBTQ representation. It was just that was more of a writing issue. I didn't feel like we were let down, like I was let down as a queer reader by the storyline. I just felt let down as a reader who wants more nuance and slow burn in the character development. Yeah, wants more of an arc to a romance rather than just they see each other, they like each other, and there they shall stay.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
If it weren't for the fact that Sophia as a character got what felt like the short end of the stick with character development, I would definitely have rated this book more highly because I think it came so close to being a really empowering story. And I don't think it's not. I don't think it is damaging to readers who are gay or bisexual or questioning their sexuality. I don't think it. I mean, obviously, there's homophobia spouted within the book, but it's very clearly signposted as wrong. And it's not something that challenges Sophia's sense of self. So it's actually, it is quite empowering in that sense that she never doubts herself based on other people's perceptions and other people's bigotry. It's just, yeah, I just don't think it's a great read in other ways that I've already talked about.
So the next two questions are for both of us. So, thinking of the book that you've just read, do you regret reading it, and did you learn something from reading it?
So I don't regret reading it at all because I think it's really important to support these narratives as they're coming out, because the only way to get more of them is to keep buying them and reading them and talking about them. So, you know, I'm really glad that I've bought it and read it and talking about it, because I think, A, some people might listen to this and think, yeah, I mean, I'm interested enough to pick it up anyway, and that would be cool. And also, I think we should be encouraging the writing of these stories that do push the boat out and try something new, especially in the YA fantasy field. Or rather, especially in the YA field in general, when we're aiming books at young people, it's really good to be prioritizing alternative perspectives. I think I definitely, I don't know if I'd say I like learned it, but it definitely highlighted the importance of paying attention to the development of my characters and the development of the relationships in the books that I'm writing. How about you?
Again, similar to you, I always feel like this is a really loaded question because if I say I don't regret it, it's like, oh, well, then you enjoyed it. And I feel like there's a huge difference between the two. And I try really hard not to be negative. In a sense, I wish I hadn't because I feel like in my head, I built it up to be such a brilliant book that now reading it, I'm a little bit disappointed. But then also, I'm not unhappy that I've read it because now I've experienced it. The downside is that I went into it thinking it was going to be a completely different book. So I am leaning more on the side of disappointed. But what it has taught me as a writer is to have a look more at the setting of my characters and where they are and what they're doing. But also, as a podcast host, is maybe to pull my reading slightly earlier in the week so I have more time to reflect because I feel like the reflection time between finishing it on Thursday to the book club meeting and to them recording today, I was allowed to reflect and really hanker down some of my feelings, whereas a lot of the time I finish it the day before and I feel like I'm still sitting in that enjoyment of finishing the book. I can't hand on heart say that I don't regret buying it
Interesting.
because I was so let down by it, and I think it's probably one of the books, if not the book, but one of the books that I feel like has let me down the most during season one.
Wow.
But actually, this leads me on to my next question, which I feel like carries on perfectly, which is, do you think it would be better for the targeted age, or do you think it fits for the targeted age? And I think that might be the issue. I think we had a book not so long ago where I think this book, I might have enjoyed it more 10 years ago than I am now. I don't know if I'm expecting more. And it's also that part of young adult. I think sometimes I'm too old for some certain parts of young adult because young adult covers such a vast age. But yet the characters in this book are of the older age. So I'm not 100% sure where it sits. But I do think someone that's younger might have glossed over some of the bigger issues of this book.
For sure.
I think it's just why that some people are absolutely head over heels in love with it. Some people are very torn by it. But I feel like, to the first question, do I regret it? I feel like I wouldn't regret it if I was younger.
Mm.
So do you think yours fits? And do you think it'd be enjoyed more by the target age group?
So it's an interesting one. I do. When I was reading it, I was noting that there's a lot of repetition, which made me wonder if it's aimed younger, on the younger end of YA. I don't know how deliberate that was as a strategy. But because as well, a lot of the things that are addressed are quite... Like, some of the violence that's referenced is pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Not that it's enormously graphic or bloody, although I did read it over a week ago now, so I don't want to hand on heart say, like, oh, there is not a graphic description of X, Y, and Z. So, yeah, I think it's a bit difficult. I found it a bit difficult to pitch exactly where in the YA age range this would be aimed at. I do think it's entirely possible that younger readers would feel less strongly about some of the issues that I had with the book. And I think, you know, I've seen a lot of people online who've absolutely loved this book. And I don't know how old they are. I'm not trying to say, like, they must be younger readers. Like, for all I know, they just saw something in it that I didn't, or were prioritizing different things about it. So I don't know is the real answer to that. I do think it's possible that younger readers would enjoy it in a less complicated way. So our last question from our book club members today was, do you think that the book you read would be a good introduction to the fantasy genre for somebody?
No.
Why not?
I'm so blunt. No, because I don't feel like it's a good representation of what the fantasy genre is about. I feel like if you were saying, do you think it's a good introduction to romance with fantasy as an element, I would say yes. But I don't think this book should be marketed as a fantasy book, because it's not got a strong enough fantasy voice in it. It doesn't... There was a checklist, which there might be, but I don't know where it is. There's a checklist for fantasy. I don't think this book would tick a lot of the boxes.
Sure.
What about for you?
In some ways, I could see it potentially. If it would kind of depend what somebody's hesitation was to reading fantasy. Because on the one hand, the fact that it starts off with not a lot of magic in it, and then the magical elements become more significant as the book goes on, that's quite interesting, and that might draw someone in whose hesitation is like, I don't know if I like all the magic in fantasy. And then they're kind of slowly drip fed it, and it becomes more of a significant component over time. But for me, I think my favorite element of fantasy is the world building. So if I was picking a book to give somebody as like a, here is your intro to fantasy, I would want something that did a more interesting thing with the world building. So I would probably go with something more like Daughter of Smoke and Bone, which is a Lainey Taylor book and the beginning of a trilogy, where the character in the first book spends half her time in the normal our world, half her time in a kind of fantasy setting. So the world building in that book is stunning. And I think that's a much better introduction, in the sense that, you know, you're not thrust headfirst into a full-on other universe as a reader. You get to experience it in bits and pieces, and you put it together over time. So in some ways, this book does that with magic, although in a slightly less thorough way, because it doesn't become like all important by the end of the book. But yeah, ultimately, I don't think I would pick this as a good intro to fantasy.
Interesting. No, me neither. Like, if I think about fantasy books and where I would put this in that lineup, it wouldn't be on that line.
Sure. I think then that draws our book discussion to a close.
It does.
And brings us on to Laura's random question of the week.
Yay!
Do a different theme song because it's a different person.
Love it. Love it. Oh, I'm in the hot seat. I'm in the hot
you
seat.
You are. So the question is, if you had to delete all but three apps from your smartphone, which ones would you keep?
Oh, this is super easy. Instagram. Uh-huh. Instagram would be one I would keep. Can I just clarify one thing first?
Mm.
You know, like WhatsApp and stuff, is that counted as an app?
WhatsApp is an app.
Okay, so I can have my text messages.
You can have your text messages, yes.
Even though that's an app.
Well, so messages comes with the phone.
Okay, that's fine.
So I'm going to allow you to have the ability to call, the ability to send texts, and like Chrome, they stay regardless.
Instagram, Facebook Messenger, but not Facebook, and Tumblr.
Okay.
What about for you?
Well, one of them would have to be WhatsApp, because I don't use my text messages at all. I only use WhatsApp. So it'd have to be maybe WhatsApp, Twitter, and then... I don't know. Probably either my Fitbit app or Duolingo. That's what I'm torn between. Because, like, probably it would have to be Fitbit. No, I don't know. I go through phases of using one or using the other.
You can get around Fitbit, though.
Hmm?
You can use the internet version for Fitbit. You don't actually need the app anymore.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, I'll go with Duolingo then, because I swear I'm going to learn French if it kills me.
So the reason I picked mine, just because I dropped WhatsApp for Facebook Messenger, because a lot of the people that I WhatsApp, I called Facebook Messenger.
That makes sense.
Instagram, I'm a very visual person. And between that and Twitter, it's the one I feel like I'm stronger at, because I'm more visual than I am quick-witted. I'm not very good at the characters. And then Tumblr, I know it's weird, but I can literally go down it and it's an absolute dumpster fire. But depending on my mood, it either makes my mood better, or sometimes it makes me have a deeper thought process for some of the things I see. And because I am very into Formula One, I love the Tumblr Formula One scene on there at the minute. And if I was going to get all my information, because obviously I've dropped Twitter, I would get it on Tumblr. And I don't have to talk to people, and people don't have to follow me, and they won't think I'm a loser because I don't have followers, because they can't see it on Tumblr, which is the one thing I dislike about Twitter. I feel like people click on you and it's like, oh, you've only got 100 something, you're not worth talking to. People, I feel like, are more judgmental because they can see it, whereas on Tumblr you can hide a lot of your things.
Fair.
But yeah. I like that. I feel like I ruined it for you though by being so quick on the mark. I was literally like bam bam bam.
No, it's fine. I'm glad it was so easy for you. I don't like putting people too much on the spot.
I think it's just because my phone is always attached to me. I only really look at the same few apps all the time.
Right. Sometimes I go through phases where I just like leave my phone in a room and I wander off and I forget where it is. So I don't feel super attached to my apps. I'll go through phases where I'm on it all the time, but that's normally because I'm doom scrolling just through like news and stuff. So there are maybe 5 or 6 apps that I use a lot, and that's why it was hard for me, because I was like, I'd rather go without my phone entirely in many ways than have to narrow down the 5 or 6 apps that I use every day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To just 3.
I feel like I wouldn't know who I am without my phone, which might make me seem really sad to other people, but the thing is that I disconnect a lot in person, and I feel like I'm more present with a phone, for a phone, than I can be in person. So a lot of my relationships I feel like I've strengthened because of my interaction with them through my phone, whereas in person sometimes I find people a little bit too much, just a bit overwhelming, and I can't really just go back up because they're there and it's really offensive. But yeah,
okay, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast and the end of our last episode in this format for season 1.
Yes, so we have another episode that'll be out next week, which is our Christmas episode, which is really exciting. And we're basically the island has graciously gifted us a surprise book. I will drop all the details in next week, so you'll have to stay tuned to find out which brand we've worked with. I mean, I say we've worked with, though, that the island paid for them, basically. Like, I bought them with my own money, but I've contacted them and said, do you mind if I give you a shout out? And they were like, yeah. And I'm super excited to talk about them. And also, we're sort of doing Joe's random question of the week, but as a format.
and we're going to go over some of the older books that we've discussed and just really go back through some of the season. And then sort of what we're hoping to bring to season two as well.
Yeah, so that's going to be really good fun. And yeah, then we'll be on a bit of a break. If you feel like you're going to miss us too much, don't worry, you have options. So you can follow us on Instagram. We are the Island Library Podcast over there. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at the Island Lib Pod. You should also check out our website, which is theislandlibrary.com. And if you feel like that's not going to be enough and you want to interact with us, which I can't blame you because who wouldn't want to interact with us, then please consider joining our book club, because the book club will continue to run between seasons and we are really looking forward to being able to check in with our book club members and chat about the exciting stuff that we've got lined up to read for those. Thank you, Jo, so much for joining me for this episode.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you to everybody for listening and to our lovely Patreons for being so supportive.
Yes, we appreciate every single one of you. Thank you so much if you support us. Thank you so, so much if you join the book club, and thank you to all of our listeners, because without you, we would just be talking into thin air, which we would probably do.
Yeah, I think I still would do that. I still think I would do that.
But it's really nice to know that there are people out there, and, you know, feel free to get in touch if you have any questions. Or if you want to recommend books for us to check out in the future, we are currently planning our different themes and the ideas that we want to play with for season two. So if there are any themes or books you particularly want us to look at, shoot us an email. Our email will be in the show notes. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
I have found a splash sound effect, by the way, for when it is time to chuck something in the ocean.
I thought this book was really going to get me there, but it didn't.